Thanks for listening to AM 620 KTOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now, coming to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.
You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
Online at 620KTOJ.com and on the air at AM 620KTOJ.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's smart talk station. Our guest is Charles Durber, author of the book Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on the Changing World. But I do not see him on the board. We seem to have lost Charles Durber. Could we give him a call back while we're filling time? Thank you very much. So we've been talking to Charles Durber. He is a professor of sociology at Boston College and former director of its program on the social economy and social justice. He's written 15 books reviewed in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, and many other places. I lost my place here. I'm a little fishmuzzled because we seem to have lost our guest. Coming up, let me tell you what's coming up in the next hour. Stephen Reynolds is going to be here. Last week, this is kind of a listener-driven show this week. Last week, I got a call from a candidate who is running for Congressional District 1. That is the district where Suzanne Bonamici is running against Rob Cornelius, and those are the two most prominent candidates. Stephen Reynolds called me last week and said, hey, I don't think I'm getting a fair shake in the media. I am also running for Congressional District 1 here in Oregon, and I'm wondering why no one's talking to me. In fact, he was at an Oregon League of Women Voters debate, and he was essentially not mentioned by omission in an OPB posting on their website saying there was Rob Cornelius and Suzanne Bonamici and a couple of other people. So once we're finished with our conversation with Charles Durber and Karl Marx, we are going to move on and meet Stephen Reynolds, who is going to be here in studio with us. Looks like we have Charles back. Charles Durber, welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. Sorry we lost you there.
Yeah, sorry about that, Adam. I thought my little Wheaton Terrier puppy here had chewed through a phone cord or something, but it's intact. So
he's probably a capitalist, that rotten little dog.
These puppies are very socialist.
Okay, all right. I won't get into my puppies. I want to take some questions. We have one more segment. I wish I could keep you on longer. Let's go to David in New York. David, welcome to Mad as Hell in America. You're on with Charles Durber.
Adam, thanks a lot for taking my call. Professor Durber, thanks for being on the show. It's great to talk to you. I have just one question. I got a few sentences that are going to lead up to it, so just bear with me. I'm certainly in agreement with the idea that Marx was a prophet, among other things, of the fate of capitalism, and that we are indeed living that out. And let's give kudos to Sean for lighting that up on this show. I think it could also be argued that Marx was in some respects a romantic in view of his belief in the power of the human imagination and because of his ideas on how political systems can thwart that power and alienate individuals from each other and from nature in the process. Now, I'm not a scholar of Marx by any means, but I am a reader of his work, and one of my longstanding resistances to Marx, as I understand him, is his utopianism. As a robustly skeptical romantic myself, I have some issue with the idea that any society can avoid certain necessary vicissitudes, and that these vicissitudes must be addressed in ways that Marx, in certain respects, did not really talk about. So my question simply is, do you have anything to say about this particular aspect of Marx's philosophy?
Thanks for the call, David. Let's take it off.
Adam, your audience is so interesting and so informed. It's wonderful.
I'm blessed that way. Yes, it's true.
Yes, I'm sure you've earned that audience. But I think this is a great question. I mean, Marx, yes, I suppose you can say he was a utopian, and thank God, because, you know, we're facing such profound crises. You know, when you think of climate change, militarism, and the economic crisis of global. You need, if one means by utopianism the ability to imagine, you talked about romantics, you know, cultivating the imagination. It's certainly true that Marx was a romantic in that sense. He believed in the possibility of human liberation, and he really believed it.
I believe in that too, so I think of myself as a utopian.
Yes.
Go on.
And But I just want to counter, was it David?
David from New York.
David's. He was a very pragmatic utopian. If you actually, one thing I haven't said, but it's written deeply into the book, Marx was a very dedicated activist, and he was an activist. In fact, a lot of his work came out posthumously because during his most productive years in the 1850s and early 1860s and so forth, he was completely caught up in the world of the labor and anarchist and other forms of global activism that were emerging to respond to global capitalism. And he operated politically very passionately at every level. A lot of Marx would ally himself with social democratic, what we think of today as social democratic groups that were arguing for an 8-hour week, you know, an 8-hour day, or for, you know, universal suffrage and such things. And he was aligning himself with parties. He was utopian in his thinking, but in his activism, he was profoundly pragmatic. That is, he was willing to ally himself and believed that in each society, he wrote at length in some of his lesser-known essays about how the working people in France were very different than the working people in England in terms of the political possibilities that confronted them. And so I think it's not fair to say he was very dedicated. He would criticize anarchists who said it was just totally hopeless to think about getting into the political system and so forth. Not that he was supporting, you know, normal politics or normal electoral politics, but he believed that you have to use every possible political, you know, advantage in every system that was functioning in capitalism in his day to make a difference. So he really did and threw himself passionately into the world of politics, including electoral politics, although it is true that he did this not for sort of narrow partisan or sort of short term. I think he would be really horrified by what the Democratic Party has become, which is a softer voice of business and capital.
Right.
But on the other hand,
I want to move on to make sure we have some people been holding for a while.
Sure.
So we're talking to Professor Charles Derver. Marx's Ghost is the book, Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. Let's go to Joe in Portland. Thanks for holding, Joe. You're on with Charles Derver.
Thank you. And this is a question for both of you or either of you. We know that the corporate media is there to, to calm down the general masses who watch that everything's fine. Those demonstrators are the one out of 1,000 that's a criminal of some kind or a weirdo of some kind. You know, that's who they interview, or at least that's who they put on the air. And so they make them look at, but then we have you guys, and, you know, and we have the morning shows that are on, Carl in the Morning, et cetera. How do we know that you're not the same thing? You have commercials on there for, and I know it's a business and you have to stay in business to spread your word. But how do we know that you aren't kind of doing the same thing? We come on the show, we vent our frustrations, we have a good talk, you respond to it in a positive way, and we feel elated. You know, we feel like, okay, this is something that someone else knows about and is helping me take care of.
It's a great question, Joe.
I don't think that.
No, but it's a really good question.
It is a great question.
It's. I mean, I could answer it, but I'd like you to take a crack at it, Charles, because
okay,
I have my own version.
You're thinking too, as you know, as a person in the media. I think the way that I think about this, and I think that Marx also would think about this, given his life, is that the test of these words is in the action. I mean, I just want to repeat, Marx was a really committed activist. I mean, I think most people think of him as an intellectual scribbling away his life in the British, you know, some dusty room of the British Museum in London. And he did spend a lot of time writing. But as I said earlier, he was probably the leading activist organizer of his time, particularly around the emergence of global capitalism, because he foresaw that them would go global. And I think he would say, well, the test of anybody's words is how they're putting these words into action. So I think your question is very fair, and it is true that in some sense the margins of freedom that exist in American media, they are on the margins, and they give people doubt about whether any of these more radical critiques, you know, to talk about corporate media, are legitimate, because after all, you have Adam Klugman on Mad as Hell, and so doesn't that prove we have a fully democratic system?
Right. I think that's a fair question. And is it really just fitting within the paradigm? We say, okay, is it really possible to just suddenly step outside the paradigm and say, okay, no, we're having a conversation outside of all of that influence? Mm-hmm. And I don't think, you know, I think Brecht tried to address this. And so that's how I would answer it. I would answer it from where Brecht was looking at it. So Brecht's theory was that the kind of the Aristotelian form was really a way to help people discharge their political volition in the theater so that they could step out and then kind of be well adjusted to a maladapted society. That was basically his feeling. So he tried to write plays that did not provide people with a catharsis, so that they had to leave the feeling with a very sick, stuck kind of feeling, so that they had to then take out and live the solution in the world, as opposed to discharging that political volition in the theater. And Brecht very much felt that that was that catharsis itself was a political tool used to control people. So that's
interesting, Adam. And I just want to add that, because I think that's a very interesting idea, that Marx thought a lot about this, and he argued that social movements, you know, that the ability to create a counterculture, a genuine set of ideas that were lived experience, had to be embraced by grassroots movements like the Occupy movement that we see are actually practicing forms of experience that take ideas that you put on your show and that I've been talking about and that I think are true to Marx, and putting them into action in the public arena. And I think that is Marx's test. If you want to know whether the ideas that you're hearing are useful, how are they translating into practice? Remember, Marx was a materialist, so he said ideas tend to reflect the underlying sources of economic and political power. And but ideas are very, very important. Marx paid a lot of attention to the production of ideas. They're more important than the production of goods, because they ultimately legitimate the systems of power. So and I think he believed in the labor movement and in larger social movements precisely because he thought they were spaces, social spaces, where people could not get this kind of artificial catharsis you were talking about, Adam, that these would be the actual playing out of new forms of experience that would keep these ideas authentic and true to lived experience.
That is an excellent place to end this. Lived experience. Our guest has been Charles Derber, professor of sociology at Boston College and author of an extraordinary book on Karl Marx called Marx's Ghost, Midnight Conversations on Changing the World. Charles Derber, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Adam, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And thanks to your listeners, who are wonderful.
Yeah, they are. Thank you very much. When we come back, we're going to speak with local candidate Stephen Reynolds, running in Congressional District 1 against Suzanne Bonamici and Rob Cornelis. And we're going to give him some time here on the show to let you know who he is. That's all coming up when we get back. Bye. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ. Well, we finished a very in-depth conversation about Karl Marx, who he was, what he believed, and how we are living out a lot of his predictions about capitalism. Sean made an excellent point that I keep going back to, is people keep saying, including myself, that the system is broken. No, capitalism is working just fine, thank you very much, was Sean's point. And Sean was the inspiration for this show, because he called in and said, hey, man, stop talking about all this airy-fairy stuff and get real. Let's talk about Karl Marx. Sean, thank you, and I hope that satisfied you. This is a very listener-driven show, because this, on the same show that Sean called me, or maybe it was the following week, I got a call on air from a gentleman named Stephen Reynolds, who I had not heard of, who is running for the first congressional district alongside of Suzanne Bonamici, who's the Democratic Party candidate, also Rob Cornelius, who's the Republican candidate. There's another candidate in the race, which Stephen is going to tell us about. And then Stephen is running as the Oregon Progressive Party candidate. I'm going to read his bio, and then he's going to come on the air with us. First of all, if you want to learn more about Stephen while we're on air with him, you can go to www.truth2012.com. So here goes .org. He just corrected me. Sorry about that. .org. Thank you. That's www.truth2012.org. Or go to Facebook and type in Stephen Reynolds. He'll come up. Lieutenant Stephen Reynolds is a 2003 graduate of West Point, an entrepreneur and a humanitarian. His life experiences and his desire to make a difference in the world are what drive him. He pursues his values of service and compassion without boundaries or regard for personal wealth. From the Middle East to the People's Republic of China, Stephen has experienced the world and has a keen understanding of America's place in it. Lieutenant Dan Choi, a noted activist against the military's former Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, said of Lieutenant Reynolds, quote, Steve and I learned leadership lessons at West Point that Congress really needs. Duty, integrity, sacrifice, courage. Now we're on a new battlefield where we fight for the same objectives, freedom and justice. I'm proud of his leadership and honored to stand shoulder to shoulder with him in this battle. As I said, Lieutenant Stephen Reynolds' newest battlefield is the race for Oregon's first congressional district, where he is the Oregon Progressive Party's candidate. Welcome to the show, Stephen Reynolds.
Thank you, Adam, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start with understanding. I don't know that a lot of people even understood before we get into your candidacy. Let's talk a little bit about the Oregon Progressive Party and how you came to be its candidate. So first, give us a little background on the Oregon Progressive Party and how you came to be its candidate.
Well, the Oregon Progressive Party was a party that was put together in 2008 to get Ralph Nader onto the ballot for president. It's basically the combination of the Peace Party and the Green Party, not to be confused with the Pacific Green Party.
Okay.
How I became their candidate was I was in a class at Portland State. It was a constitutional law course, Professor Chris Shortell. And there was a lady in the class, and she's a member of their candidate discovery committee, and she liked my ability to speak and rational thoughts, complete thoughts. And she approached me and said that I should come down and check out the Oregon Progressive Party. So I'd always considered myself a Democrat, and I didn't really know who the Progressive Party was. Anyways, I went to one of their meetings and I met the people and I checked out the platform, and I realized that, you know, if you're a Democrat in Oregon, you're probably a progressive. You just don't know it. And I changed my party affiliation. And I mean, the idea of running for office prior to being approached, I mean, it never crossed my mind. And then after I was approached, it was a question of why. I mean, I felt hopeless, I guess. And
what made you feel hopeless?
Well, just the who am I to challenge politically connected, wealthy politicians, the corporate parties, the corporate Democrats, the corporate Republicans? So this past summer with the debt ceiling debacle, I just got angry, you know, I got mad as hell. Exactly. And I said that, you know what? Somebody has to stand up and say, you know what, Democrats? You know what, Republicans? You're screwed up. You're fighting. You're bickering. You're not doing anything, and people are hurting. And that I'm not okay with that. So I put my name in, and I was selected as the candidate in November. And since then, I've been out meeting people. I don't have the money to really compete, you know, in the media as far as commercials or radio spots go. I've raised a grand total of about $600-$700. But I'm handing out business cards. I've probably handed out 5,000 or 6,000 business cards. I'm making contact. I'm telling people that I exist. And you know, that's hard because I mean, myself and James Foster, the Libertarian candidate, were getting ignored in the media. I mean, it's not even that they're saying anything bad about us. They're just not saying anything at all about it.
Well, yes, that's often how it goes. It's just by omission, you don't exist.
Right.
And I think that's why I wanted to have you on the show, and I appreciated your call. We're going to take a break. We're talking to Lieutenant Stephen Reynolds. He is a candidate for Oregon's 1st Congressional District. His website is truth2012.org. Check it out. It's actually a really great, informative website. Extremely well done. If you have calls, you want to talk to Stephen, number is 503-248-0620. 1-866-452-0620 are the numbers. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. I'm Adam Klugman. We'll be right back with Stephen Reynolds.
Queen jealousy envy waits behind him. Her fiery green gown sneers at the grassy ground.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's Jimi Hendrix station. Our guest is Lieutenant Stephen Reynolds, who is a graduate of West Point. He is also an entrepreneur and a humanitarian running for Oregon's 1st Congressional District. He came to me through a phone call. He was listening to the show, called in and said, hey, I feel like I'm not getting my fair shake in the media. How about having me on? And so I did. So this has been a very listener-driven show. So we haven't gotten too much into Stephen's candidacy yet. We talked a little bit about the Progressive Party. If you want to learn more about Stephen, you can go to 2012truth.org. That's 2012truth2012.org. You know, the guy needs to get good at the details. Truth2012.org is the website. So, Stephen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
I got it written two ways in two different places. So let's talk a little bit. Let's get into the nuts and bolts. You are running for Oregon's congressional first district. This is a federal seat.
This is.
You've never had any political experience before. This is a big job.
Yes.
So tell me, when you get there, what is job assignment on day one?
Jobs. I mean, jobs is key right now. People are hurting and people need work. And I think people need the dignity of work.
Yes.
Right now, they're having difficulty passing extensions to unemployment benefits. The conversation in Washington is the wrong conversation. They're talking about unemployment benefits, but they're not talking about ways to take people off those unemployment rolls, to put them to work doing things. The Oregon Progressive Party, part of our platform, is a WPA-style work projects program, basically. And it's for infrastructure.
Explain to people what that is.
Well, during the Great Depression, there was the Works Projects Administration.
Works Progress Administration.
Progress, not
right.
Project. Okay.
Right.
My
it's okay.
Apologies.
It's okay.
We were in a point where our unemployment in this country was tragic, very similar to where we are at right now.
Yes.
And the only way that people could foresee putting these unemployed people back to work was through creating infrastructure, highways, dams, bridges. I mean, everything that we take for granted now, it started in the 1930s with the
Works Progress Administration.
And we can do that now. I mean, we have bridges that are falling down and killing people. We're a first world nation that trails third world nations in broadband internet adoption. I mean, we trail Latvia and Estonia as far as our average internet speeds go.
So the Works Progress Administration is something that's always made sense to me. So jobs are assignment on day one. We've got to put people back to work.
Yes.
But not just any old jobs.
No.
I mean, you know, jobs at Walmart don't make ends meet.
Right.
So what kind of jobs are we talking about?
We're talking about maintenance jobs. We're talking about construction jobs. We're talking about the services that those jobs need. Truck drivers, equipment manufacturing jobs, the sorts of jobs that traditionally our manufacturing base has provided, our construction industry has used, and we're stale. Our economy isn't deteriorating at this point, but it's stale. It's stagnant. People are maintaining, and we shouldn't be maintaining. We should be progressing. We should be advancing as a nation. We're getting we're literally getting passed by China. I lived in China for a year. I was doing volunteer work there, and China is a lot of things, and I don't necessarily agree with their authoritarian execution of justice, but they get things done. I mean, they say, hey, we're going to build this. They build it, and it's there. In America, we can't even appropriate the funds to do something like that.
So what happens to you, and this is just a fair challenge, I think, you come in with an idea like the Works Progress Administration, and what everybody's going to scream is socialism.
Right.
And then if that doesn't work, then they're going to scream communism, and if that doesn't work, they're going to scream Marxism. So how do you overcome this kind of built-in prejudice inside of Congress where common sense ideas like the Works Progress Administration never get through because of these kinds of labels?
Well, I'm going to make a bold statement. Politicians are cowards. They are afraid of their benefactors. They count on the money that the corporate parties, that association with the corporate parties gives them access to. Me, I don't care who I anger. I mean, really, I'm not running to be a politician. I'm running to serve the people of the 1st Congressional District. I will go in, I will draft legislation, I will walk it to every single member of the House and Senate and give them one opportunity to sign off. And then, if you don't sign off, I'll tell everybody, you know what, this job could put people back to work today, and your representative does not think it's important. Your representative does not think that this is necessary. We need to hold our politicians accountable. Like I said, they're cowards. Politicians will take good legislation and stuff it with bad. And when you challenge them on it, they'll say, well, I wasn't voting for the bad legislation. I was voting for the good legislation. I just had to. And I think that's cowardly. It's dishonest. And I think that needs to stop. I mean, given my druthers, I would craft legislation that said one bill, one law. You know, if you're going to create a law, everything that is in that bill has to be associated with that bill. I mean, why are we tying unemployment benefits to a proclamation to make a decision on the Keystone Pipeline?
It's madness.
It is madness.
It's madness. Our guest is Lieutenant Stephen Reynolds. He is running for Oregon's 1st Congressional District. The website is truth2012.org. You can find out more about him there. And on your website, I noticed that you've taken a series of pledges. I'd like to talk about that, but one of the pledges that I didn't quite understand that you said that you will only, if you were elected, that you would only serve the term remaining in David Wu, who is the vacated congressman, you would only serve the remainder of his term. Does that mean you would not run for re-election?
I am not going to run for re-election. Should the Oregon Progressive Party nominate me again?
I see.
And the people of Oregon have faith in my ability and my actions, I will honorably serve. I mean, it would be a great honor to serve the people of Oregon continually, but I don't think my job as a politician is to run for office or to fundraise. I mean, if you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, whoever wins this election, aside from myself, they're going to go to Washington, they're going to accept their seat, and then they're going to start campaigning again for the fall of 2012. And why? That's the congressmen get paid $174,000 a year. This year, or in the year 2012, they will work 109 days. It works out to roughly, I mean, don't hold me to it, but around $1,550, $1,600 a day for the work that they're doing. And they're not doing anything. So what are we paying them for? I'm going to go to Washington. I'm going to work. I'm going to fight. I'm going to yell. And I will piss people off.
You can say that here.
Okay.
This is mad as hell in America.
Well, I wasn't sure.
And you're going to make people mad. I say it all the time. So that's another one of your pledges. It relates to salary. On your website, you say you've taken a pledge that you'll only take a salary that's commensurate with the median income of the average American. Is that right?
Of the average household in Oregon. I will only accept. I will donate anything in excess of that to the homeless veterans shelter that there is in Oregon. It's run by the Salvation Army, and I think it's a great program. And I listened to the direct. I had the opportunity to listen to the director at a West Point Society function, and they're doing great work, and I believe in it. And I think that if I'm going to Washington in this election, it's not about the job. It's about the job. It's not about the money.
It's not about the money, right? It's not. It's about service.
Yes.
And I really like the spirit that you're moving forward. And we do have a call on the board. I'd like to take it. Linda from McMinnville, welcome to Matt is Hell in America. You're on with Stephen Reynolds.
Okay. Well, Stephen, I voted progressive against Ron Wyden in the last election because he made me angry. And it looks like I was right if we think about what he did with Paul Ryan the other day and his answers on Carl in the Morning, which, you know, were really not very good answers. So you may get my vote just because I'm no longer voting for the lesser of two evils. I'll either write my own name in unless somebody better is on the ballot. And you sound like you may just get my vote.
Well, bad and worse really aren't a choice, is it?
Right. The lesser of two evils still gets us evil. So we have to find a way to make another choice. And I get the sense that that's the spirit that you're running your campaign in.
Yes. I say reject the Democrats. Reject the Republicans. Send the message to Washington that we know what's going on. We see what you're doing, and we're not okay with it. Money has infected our political system, and it drives our policy. And when the needs of the people should be driving our policy, and they're not being met. I don't think politicians respect their constituents. I'm not saying all politicians. I mean, there are some very admirable people sitting in the House and Senate, but the majority are not working for their constituents. They're working to be reelected.
And you've made a very clear statement that your goal is not necessarily to get reelected, but to go and take a very clear stand for a set of policies that represent what is good for the people, not as what good for your political career. I'm going to move on to the question of single payer. All of my listeners know that I'm an avid single payer supporter. While I am on that subject, I want to make an announcement. There is an Inner City Blues Festival reunion on Saturday, April 4th at the Melody Ballroom. I want you to talk a little bit about this. There's kind of under the umbrella of all the entire single payer movement here in Oregon, which is formidable. There's going to be a blues festival again. That's on Saturday, April 14th on the Melody Ballroom. I will put this up on my website. Is there anything you want to add to this?
I was at they had an event today where they brought the organizers from the Vermont Workers Party.
Right. The Vermont Workers Party are actually on a national tour around the country to tell them how they succeeded in Oregon in creating not really a single payer, but a universal health care plan in Vermont. And they're here in Oregon teaching us how to do it.
Right. And they were at the Portland Community College. And I mean, there were 300-400 people there. I mean, and people are really excited about the possibility of providing a basic human right. I mean, something that we shouldn't even be talking about. Because it's in my mind, it's a given. It's right up there with education and protection from the police, literally sometimes.
Yeah. yeah. Right. Got it.
But it's a basic human right. It's, you know, who are you to make the decision that because that person has cancer, they don't get care because they can't afford it? I mean, you ask someone. Well, if you had to make the decision, who would you choose among your friends, your neighbors, your family? I mean, what if they didn't have health care and you had to make that decision? Could you do it? No.
I guess if you're a health care insurance industry, it's not a problem, but most human beings would have trouble with that decision. So let's talk a little bit about single payer. How do we get there from here?
My personal belief is I think we need to be approaching it from two different angles. I mean, we have a very good system here in the United States, Medicare. The problem with Medicare is we take our elderly and our infirm and we put them in a system where they use, I mean, they, well, they're the only ones in the system, so they're using a lot of the resources, or all the resources. But we could have everybody in the system sharing the costs. Not everybody is going to consume as much of the healthcare resources as the elderly. I mean, we've developed a situation in this country where we will put someone, an insurance company will cover you from the time you're born until you're 65, and then they'll pass you off to the taxpayers because you're no longer profitable. That's disgusting. It's not okay.
So how do we actually get there? So where does the funding come from?
So the way we get there, we take Medicare, and we open it up little by little to the youngest, least consumer, the people who consume the least amount of healthcare, which tends to be the younger, healthier people, slowly to allow Medicare to grow organically, but, you know, set timelines. 5 years from now, everyone who's 24 or younger will have the opportunity. Allow small businesses to transfer their employees to the Medicare plan. We are at a serious competitive disadvantage with our true competitors in the world, countries like France and Germany and England, in that businesses a good business provides its workers with health care, but it's so expensive that they either don't get a program that meets the needs of their workers, or they sacrifice something else to meet the needs of their workers. And I don't think that should be even a choice. The government should normalize healthcare by providing equal access to everyone. The Vermont Workers Party, they stress the point, and it's true. Healthcare is a basic human right.
That's where we start with this conversation. It is a fundamental human right, and that was what succeeded in Vermont, and I agree with you. We're going to have to run, but I want to give you a parting shot. Our guest has been Lieutenant Stephen Reynolds. The website is truth2012.org. He is running for Oregon's first congressional district, has made it clear that a vote for him is to say that business as usual between the Republicans and the Democrats in Washington is not acceptable. Stephen Reynolds, your parting shot.
Our government is dysfunctional, and it's the Democrats and Republicans' fault. Do not send the message to Washington by electing a Democrat and Republican that we're okay with what's going on, because I don't think anybody's really okay with what's going on. I'm certainly not okay with what's going on in Washington, and people need to realize that, you know what? Vote for me. It's not a wasted vote, because if you're worried about me splitting the vote, vote for me anyways, because we definitely don't want the Republican to win.
No, that we don't. But I don't know that the Democrat is all. I like Suzanne Bonamici very much. I think she's a very qualified candidate. But I understand on principle that we're very frustrated with the way the Democratic Party is conducting itself, certainly in light of what happened with Ron Wyden.
Put the fear for their jobs in them, the way the rest of the country fears for their jobs. They don't worry about paying their bills. They don't worry about getting enough hours to make their mortgage payment. Those are the kind of concerns that the people in Washington, the politicians, the lobbyists, they're not making decisions based upon the welfare and well-being of people. They're making the decisions based upon the welfare and well-being of corporations and their own interests. And we have to put that fear in them that we're going to hold you accountable, and you can do that by voting for me.
Our guest has been Stephen Reynolds. The website is truth2012.org. He is running as the Oregon Progressive Party's candidate for Oregon's District 1. That's the Congressional District 1. That's the big federal house. Stephen Reynolds, I wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I think you did a great job.
Thank you.
If somebody wants to contact you, what do they do?
www.truth2012.org. Fill out a contact form. I'll say this. I believe that I'm going to win. I just need your help. Vote for me, and we'll make a statement from Oregon. It's the last election before the full cycle in the fall of 2012. Let's do this.
Stephen Reynolds has been our guest. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the show. When we come back, It's going to be my parting shot. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We'll be right back.
Tell all the people that you see, follow me. Follow me down. Tell all the people that you see, set them free. Follow me down.
Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman. You're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's Smart Talk Station. Our guest was just Stephen Reynolds, and I did get the website wrong once or twice, I believe. So let me be absolutely clear about his website. The website is truth2012.org. That's truth2012.org for Stephen Reynolds. And I thought it was a really, really interesting and informative conversation about what the alternatives are. We were talking at the break here at the studio about how sometimes inexperience is an asset and not a liability. Sometimes in politics, too much experience, as we've seen in this recent choice that Ron Wyden has made, becomes a liability because you make decisions based on political calculations, not on principle. So again, Stephen Reynolds was the guest, and his website is truth2012.org. truth2012.org. Send him an email, send him a few bucks, support him. It's important. He is certainly the David in this Goliath for Congressional District 1. So I just want to give a parting shot. It was, I thought, a really fun, informative show. I loved having Charles Gerber, but we started out by saying, I started out by saying that the current system just simply is no longer serving the people. I was saying that it is broken. And then Sean, who got the whole Marx conversation started here in Mad as Hell in America, said, you know, stop saying that the system is broken. It's not broken. Capitalism is working perfectly. Thank you very much. And so I think that brings us to the brink of a very important consideration. Is that we need to reach beyond the political system and start to address the problems at the economic level. It is the economic system that is determining the quality of life in this country. It is the economic system that has co-opted our political system so that there is no longer any difference between the United States government and the economic interests that control it. So this is the conversation. We need to democratize and redemocratize our economic institutions. So begin to look past our politicians. They are merely agents of an economic system that is destroying the interests of the honest working people of this country. So that's my parting shot. I want to let everybody know I will not be here on Christmas Eve nor on New Year's Eve, but I will be hosting Norman Goldman next week and the week that follows. So if you listen in, you'll hear me. Thanks for listening. This is Adam Klugman. See you next week.